Hello and welcome to the Legal and Governance Hub podcast show. I'm your host, Gulnaz Raja. I started this podcast to share my experience and knowledge of governance, risk management and regulation, and why these are particularly necessary for startups and fintechs. With growing pressure on the need for companies to make profit and remain sustainable, from my professional experience, governance and risk plays a huge part in the long-term success and viability of a company. We hope you enjoy our show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's begin. Hello, everybody. I'd like to welcome today to our new founders series. My first guest being Hannah Strawbridge from Han Law Company, which is an employment law and HR legal consultancy. Welcome, Hannah.
Hi, Gulnaz. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you? It's great to have you as a guest, first guest on the Founders podcast.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks very much for having me.
Did you want to tell us a bit about your business?
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you. So I'm an employment solicitor by trade. I've been doing that forever. I mean, I'm 41 this month, so it's been a while. And then nearly two years ago, I set up my own business, which is a consultancy model, employment law services business, which is rapidly growing and really enjoying it, basically.
And how have you found that comparing to, as you say, kind of working for a law firm in a corporate environment? How has that been quite different to what you're normally used to?
So the reasons why I set up on my own, I've always quite fancied it. I've quite fancied having my own gig, really. But I did also feel that in the corporate legal world, there were certain things that I felt could be done differently in a more modern way, where the client would be the main focus. And I also felt that doing things in a slightly different way would also mean that the people working within my business would have more flexibility and hopefully just enjoy work a little bit more. I was being quite frustrated, to be honest, with some of the charge out rate targets that we were placed under in various firms and the way kind of performance was managed. I just felt it sort of stifled quite a lot of creativity within the organisations. And obviously we get charged out at quite a lot per hour as lawyers. And it didn't really match with the salary that I was receiving. So I kind of felt, why not really? I just kind of felt like I had nothing to lose. I was also a single mum with two small children, and I was a little bit tired of having to work 9 to 5 in an office every day. It just didn't fit in with them. And obviously I had to fight my own guilt around, you know, not being able to do certain things for them. So what I found is actually, even though it's really challenging setting up your own business on your own, it's become more enjoyable and it's actually easier in terms of my life and being able to fit it around my children and the things that I enjoy. It just feels like a more rewarding and less stressful kind of environment to work in.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think in terms of sort of the new kind of consultancy model, obviously, you know, the way we charge is completely different. The way we sort of live our lives is quite different. And it we're not necessarily kind of bound to that 9 to 5 work pattern, if you like. And also, I think, I mean, from my perspective, I've kind of always worked in-house. So normally for banks, and I've done some law firms as well, but very, very different. And I think the consultancy model is really much similar to the US model, which is the YOLO economy, which is kind of also kind of moving into the UK as well. And so the YOLO movement is basically you only live once, which I think is a great kind of acronym and about people kind of giving up legal careers or any kind of career and saying, well, look, I've got this interest, I've got this side hustle, and I want to make the most of it. And I want to be able to just work from the beach. And I think in a way, kind of COVID has accelerated that a bit. It's given people the opportunity, whether they've been made redundant or they've lost their job for whatever reason, it's given them the chance to kind of, in a way, kind of live their dream, if you like, of the sort of life that they've always wanted. And do you think that economy is now likely to shift into the UK a bit more, or is that going to take a bit more time, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's happening already. I think it's really exciting. I mean, one of the first books that I read when I set up my business is Daniel Priestley's The Entrepreneurial Revolution. I read it at the time, and that was obviously before the pandemic and the recession. And it almost needs a revisit now because it's kind of almost a bit spooky how, you know, his sort of predictions about how boutique businesses are going to really be able to give corporates a run for their money. And a lot of that is to do with the people running them, finding their passion and finding their purpose, like you say, being able to work when they want, where they want, and with whom they want. And that also takes away this idea necessarily that we have to work to save up to retire, you know, and everything's based on this future date. Whereas actually, do we even need to have that as a concept? And actually, isn't it the case that if you want to carry on working as long as you can until you die, why not? If you don't see it as work, then that's something that can be done. And another interesting concept around that is in Japan. So, you know, their concept around passion and purpose is very much that they said that the people that live the longest in certain areas of Japan are the ones that continue to work, continue to do the things that they enjoy. They definitely don't stop at 60, 65 to retire. So I feel that that is coming, you know, it's already coming to the UK, and looking at silver linings from this pandemic and this recession, it's speeding that process up, definitely, because unfortunately, you know, there are people that have lost their jobs as a result of the recession. We've read studies that show that more women than men have actually lost their roles as a result of the recession. A lot of that's because of the homeschooling that's had to be done, and women bearing the brunt of childcare and the home chores. But looking at things positively, you know, we could come out of this seeing a lot more entrepreneurs, more flexible businesses. You know, it could even result in a lower stress level. Maybe it'll improve the landscape with mental health. And then also potentially we might be looking at more women setting up businesses, which has to be a positive thing, because in terms of corporate life, we're still at a place where women at director level is a very small percentage compared to men. And, you know, if it's the case that women are setting up their own businesses, then maybe that will change. So I think there's just, it feels like we're on the cusp of quite a big change here. It's already starting to happen, but I think, you know, the interesting thing will be over the next few years, and I think the employment landscape generally is going to look very different.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in terms of, like you mentioned, the employment landscape, I think you've got people that are very much kind of on, I remember reading an article recently where somebody was saying, well, no, you know, everything should be, people should be conforming, they should be using the same meeting rooms, they should be using the same breakout rooms. You know, this is just an opportunity for people to kind of exploit who's in the office and not in the office. It's more democratic if we've all got it, in a way, sort of saying, let's wear a uniform and let's all turn up to work. And actually, I was quite surprised to even read sort of an article like that at this stage. It's almost as if, well, we haven't really learned anything. We haven't really explored kind of what's been going on, because in a way, I think employees, and although I'm no longer an employee, but I think employees have always kind of craved for some sort of work-life balance. And I think even when you ask for a doctor's appointment, or you ask to kind of have an afternoon off for whatever reason, you're always in a way you're worried about asking for it, because you're worried about how that's going to be perceived. Are you a slacker? Do you not work hard enough? Is there something wrong with this person? Are they going to be a liability? All these things kind of come up. Whereas I think in a way that the pandemic has kind of given people a bit of an open playing field to actually say, well, hang on a minute, this is my right. You know, I have this is a right that I have, and I don't have to feel guilty about having to bring up issues that should just kind of be very ordinary issues, really, from having a conversation with a manager who is very old school.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, I think some of it is historical, isn't it? It's Victorian era, but a lot of it is also what we're taught in school. You know, at the moment, I know from my children, there's the focus is very much still on you go and you get a job and then you work and you retire, which, yeah, can be good if the place where you work does give you that freedom and ability to be creative and enjoy what you do and enjoy the rest of your life. But I do feel there needs to be more around actually that, you know, what about, you know, coming up with a business idea? What about, you know, more education around mindset and positivity, and that, you know, actually what as children, what you want to achieve is completely limitless, and you can set up a business with very little money. And, you know, just to have that kind of openness to say, well, what do you want to do? The world's your oyster. You know, you don't necessarily have to do things the way that we've been telling everyone they need to do it. And I think that will have to change as well, just to reflect what people are actually doing.
I think also sort of even around sort of HR, but I think just generally other kind of legal work as well. I think startups, they want other startups to kind of support them, because I think those startups that have legal backgrounds or employment backgrounds, they've kind of set their businesses up. They know what's involved. They know what the pitfalls are, or they know kind of what the shareholding structure should look like. So they're actually in a really quite good position to be able to advise startups and SMEs about some of those issues. So it's almost like being able to pick somebody who can work for you, who actually understands it, has been through it, rather than sort of phoning up a law firm. I remember going to a networking event and somebody said to me, what you're doing is actually a breath of fresh air, because every time I write an email to my lawyer, it could just be like a line and I get charged for it. and it's absolutely true, because it doesn't really kind of build that relationship, even with the client, when you step away from the employee-employer model, even about your clients and how it can actually benefit your clients and the sort of service that they're getting as well.
Yeah, completely agree. It's just looking at things as more of a partnership as well, and a collaborative approach, rather than you're my client, you know, or you're my customer. It's much more how can we help each other out. And what I've personally found really uplifting is how setting up a business, how then, you know, people are so supportive across the board, actually, but particularly from other people who, like you say, in a similar position or have set up businesses themselves. And it's amazing then once you build that network of people that help each other out, it's nice. And obviously as well, when you're a CEO on your own and you're not sharing a business with anyone else, it's nice to feel that you're not completely on your own as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the things I loved about setting up my business was saying that I'm a director. I know it sounds ridiculous, but I just absolutely love saying it. I loved putting it on my LinkedIn as well, because I thought, well, I'm not just an employee now. I'm actually a director of a company. But I think also thinking about it from kind of at that level of directorship, I think it kind of plays into the whole sort of field, really, because it's not just kind of your employees, but it looks at some of the things that I look at is corporate governance and what that means at kind of from a director level, and you know, the executive level, and how they're behaving and their accountability in terms of some of the actions that they take and some of the decisions that they take. And I think certainly, you know, with HR and employment law and what happens in the boardroom and the dynamics, it's all very much interlinked. It's actually about kind of who is running the show, I think, really effectively, because it very much depends on the people that are in those positions and kind of how that's feeding down at employee level, which I think is quite another interesting model that is quite important within businesses, which I don't think generally people think about enough.
No, I think that's it. And I think, you know, we've all got responsibility, particularly people who are setting up their own businesses that do have that autonomy and that control to make a positive impact, whether that be, yeah, like you say, sort of making sure a board of directors are thinking about recruitment in the right way, aren't, you know, doing this dictatorial micromanagement kind of culture where it's very toxic and where, you know, employees are feeling really stressed. I know I've been in that position before, and to be honest, I don't know anyone that hasn't, coming from corporate life. Sometimes it's due to the individuals, but usually it's to do with just a more generic toxic culture. But yeah, I do think there's scope to change that. And this isn't about saying, well, everyone shouldn't be an employee. Everyone should set up a business. It's not realistic. Not everyone wants to do it. It's not about looking down on people that don't have their own businesses either. You know, I had loads of jobs that I really enjoyed. But ultimately, you know, I think things are changing, and it's more about saying to people, don't feel that you can't do that, because I'm convinced you can do. But I think there are also a lot of people in the corporate world that feel like they've been downtrodden and actually can't imagine doing that and sort of breaking free and actually having that autonomy. And it's kind of, it's our place to sort of encourage people to do that, I think, and also to have a positive impact on other businesses and the corporate world as well. And challenge some of the ways that they do business, challenge how many women are on that board, et cetera, et cetera, really.
I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know, they can lose a lot of confidence if they're working in an environment or culture that behaves in a certain way. So I think, you know, it's not always possible for people, again, to set up their own businesses, or they may not have the confidence. But I think once you get going and you make a start with it, if that's what you want to do, will you actually move on and find a different job that works for you, where you are given a bit more responsibility and you are given, you know, more chance to kind of be a bit more freer with how you are, then I think you can really excel. And I think it's just taking that next step for people, which I think is really important. But and I know another area that you've been working on is the Fair Redundancy Pledge. Did you want to tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. So it's part of Hand Laws. One of our purposes, really, is generically, is to make a positive impact in the workplace. So whether that be with employees, obviously we're an employment law business, so we act for businesses and individuals. So that includes, you know, hopefully making things better in the workplace, you know, both sides of the camp. But yeah, the Fair Redundancy Pledge, we came up with that because of the statistics and reports we were reading about women's rights being denigrated as a result of COVID in the workplace. It's quite terrifying how much women's rights at work have been reduced as a result of COVID. At this stage, we don't really know why. We can guess that it might be around things like, you know, having to work, everyone working in the home, children being off school, having to be homeschooled, and overall, women have borne the brunt of those duties more than men, not in every household, but they have overall. And therefore, potentially, some of those women have decided to quit their jobs because it's just become too much, or more women than men have been made redundant. So what we came up with is an idea of a campaign, basically, where we would look at, a bit like the gender pay gap reporting, we'd look at the people who are being made redundant within certain organisations and look at how those groups of people are broken down. So how many men have been made redundant, how many women, how many people with disabilities, to have a look at whether certain groups of society are, you know, being discriminated against as a result of this process. And it's about having transparency, really. We've got a number of organisations that have signed up to it, some really large organisations, some smaller. And it doesn't really matter whether or not they're planning on making redundancies. It's more, you know, support for something to challenge, you know, looking at disproportionate amounts of redundancies in the workplace and making sure that certain groups aren't discriminated against.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great idea. I think it obviously shows kind of support. It also shows, you know, even if they're not going through the redundancy process, but I think, you know, for employers to kind of even sign up to those kind of pledges are, I think it's great, really, because it shows that at least that they're kind of very open and transparent about it, and that they're aware of it and willing to kind of look more deeply into it should it arise. So, no, I think that's really great. And what would you say that has been kind of your biggest learnings from starting up your own HR legal business?
Where to start? Every day is a massive learning. You know, it feels like, I'll be honest, it feels like you don't have a clue of what you're doing, and then the minute that you feel like you do have a clue in terms of the business setup, I have a clue about law for my clients, you know, don't worry, but in terms of actually setting up your own business when you've not done it before, it's a big learning curve, a lot of challenges, really exciting, but you've just got to be really open-minded to that, I think, and mindset-wise, you've got to kind of accept that you don't know about this stuff, and that everything that you don't know that you're learning is going to add to the business, going to help the business grow. But, you know, that's challenging when you know how to do your job normally. So I know about employment law. I can defend a tribunal nearly with my eyes closed now. I've done that many. And then you're thrown into this environment as CEO where, well, not just CEO, I'm also finance director and all these other roles as well, sales director, commercial, and still doing some delivery. So it's all these roles that you've never done before. And I think it's accepting that it's fine. You're not going to know everything, but that's part of the journey that you're on. I think as well, you've got to get to the point of just enjoying that journey. And just embracing the fact that it's such a roller coaster emotionally. I think everyone will agree with that. you know, you might win a new client and it's like the best feeling in the world, and then you might lose a client or not get a client and you just want to cry. The impact that has on you, as opposed to when you're working for someone else, is quite phenomenal. But then it gives you that drive to want to succeed as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think what else to say is it's all about your team and the people. I try and having as much support as I can within the business, obviously, as much cash flow and figures allows. I've got some brilliant people that I work with who are also all self-employed, and then I'm growing a team of consultants as well, who are consultants for Hanlaw, and again, they work completely flexibly. But it's still about making sure you've got that really nice team vibe going on, even though everyone's self-employed. And I think also it's just shown how in a pandemic, you know, we've not been able to meet up. I mean, I've worked with my PA now for 2 years. I've only met her once and we chat every day. We're like really close. And it's amazing how actually we've hardly met each other in person. So it is possible. But I do think you need to work harder on those communication lines as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think I would echo a lot of what you've just said. I think it is, you are wearing lots of different hats, not just your legal hat. And I think for me, when obviously I'm a lawyer and a company secretary, so I get asked lots of different questions on even new areas of the law that I don't know anything about. But I think it's kind of having that support network where you can outsource work, or you can you know, work with other self-employed people and kind of build your team. I think that's really amazing. I think it's a really nice feeling. It feels like a huge sense of accomplishment as well. And I think also to meet so many different people, you know, I think for me, I've met so many different people in the last kind of 6 to 8 months that I think as an employee, I think you really are kind of just boxed into your client, which is effectively the people that you work with every day. And it's almost like this whole world out there. And I think definitely as a business, you've got the highs and lows, you win the clients, you may not get a new client that you're hoping to get. But I think every day is different and you don't know who's going to ring your phone that day or who's going to make contact with you. And I think that's a really lovely feeling. And I think also the thought of knowing that you've built something from scratch. And as you say, it doesn't have to cost the earth, but, you know, being able to build something and kind of build from that, I think is great. And I think in the times that we're in, especially you've done really, really well. So, but no, it's been fantastic speaking to you, Hannah. Thank you very much for joining as our first series of the Founders Podcast.
Thanks very much, Fiona. Thank you for inviting me.
No problem. Thanks, Hannah.
Cheers. Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Legal and Governance Hub podcast show today. If you know anyone who could benefit from our podcasts, please share this with them. If there are any topics you would like covering, DM me or leave me a comment below. If your organisation could benefit from consultancy and training, please visit legalgovernancehub.com for more information. Big thanks to everyone supporting and producing this podcast. That's it for today. I hope you have a great week and I'll see you next time.